Sheffield Live. Made in Sheffield, made by you.
If you like rock in all its forms, you will love Glory Days. You can listen to us locally on 93.2 FM and on the telly, and anywhere in the world on sheffieldlive.org. What do you think, Don? You know what, I think he likes it. That's Glory Days, every Monday 1 till 3 here on Sheffield Live. Bosh, bosh. Oops, I've had an accident.
Hello, I'm Harry Wilburn. I present Steel & Wire every Wednesday, 10 a.m. Americana, bluegrass, American roots, and more. Lots more. Lots of guests, lots of local music and musicians. That's Steel & Wire, Wednesday, 10 a.m.
You're listening to fabulous Harry Wilburn on Steel & Wire.
It's time to open the music box. Join me, Steve Roden, every Thursday morning between 10 and 12 for music from the 40s to the 90s from my own music collection. Songs I've grown up with, ones I am sure you will enjoy hearing again. Hope to see you then.
If you love new music and you want to discover the best new artists out there, then tune into The Backroom with me, Paddy. I'll be playing the best of new indie, electro, EDM and punk and showcasing new Sheffield talent. Also music news, local and national gig guide and new album releases. So tune into The Backroom every Thursday night between 6 and 7pm here on Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM.
This is Sheffield Live.
N-E-X-T.
Good morning, welcome morning. To the Live Science Radio Show here on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM on digital if you're in South Yorkshire or sheffieldlive.org, talking about science in all its different forms every Saturday morning, 11 until 12. We've got Julian Pauly live in the studio as usual on this rather miserable day, and indeed our guest speaker this week and indeed every third Saturday is the month is Gareth Morgan, who's a member of and also ex-president of the Sheffield Photographic Society, and he'll be talking about guess what? Photographing in bad weather, or bad weather photography, all very apt for this time of year, but spring is on its way. All being well, the guest speaker next Saturday, and indeed every fourth Saturday of the month, it's Chris Dale, is going to be talking about sugar, continuing the theme of diet and ultra processed foods and the impact on our health. All good stuff, eh? Later in the show, we'll also be talking to our PG. Oh, what will he be talking about? Bits and pieces? Bits and bobs?
Bits and bobs.
Who knows? Who knows? But first up, we're going to talk about the Royal Horticultural Society. We're members and we do get a magazine every month. It's very interesting stuff. When we've read it, we pass it on to a neighbour, so it's very sustainable. So the RHS has launched a peat-free advice service for all gardeners, and I stress all gardeners, so that's quite unusual for the Royal Horticultural Society, but they are trying to modernise. So the Royal Horticultural Society has launched a free service to help answer questions from all gardeners who want tips for success with peat-free growing. The queries will be tackled via email by Nikki Barker, who's the RHS peat-free transition technical coordinator. Going peat-free is a simple action gardeners take which has a big positive impact on our planet, says Nikki. By making our service open to anyone, we hope to remove the last barriers to this more sustainable way of growing. The questions we tend to be around choosing the right peat-free compost and getting watering right. By launching this service now, people can get in touch as they start thinking about buying compost and sowing seeds for the upcoming growing season. And as I said, this is the first time a Royal Horticultural Society advice service has been made available to all gardeners, not just RHS members. And it comes swiftly after RHS trials of peat-free and peat-reduced growing media showed that peat-free blends may in fact hold water better than the peat-based equivalents. The research is part of the collaborative RHS Transition to Peat-Free Fellowship, working with 8 nurseries in the UK. Irrigation trials were carried out in growing media from 6 major manufacturers between spring 2023 and autumn 2024 at 4 leading UK nurseries. They are Allensmore Nurseries in Hereford, Johnson's Nurseries in York, Hillier Nurseries in Hampshire and Lavinia Nurseries in Preston. And Dr. Prashad, who's the RHS Transition to Peat-Free Research Fellow who conducted the trial, says this is a breakthrough for the industry. To have demystified one of the biggest grower concerns is really encouraging. Peat-free growing media differ from peat-based mixes in physical, chemical and biological properties, including water demand and moisture retention. So home gardeners need to be aware of the differences. Always check before you water plants in peat-free compost, either by pushing your finger into feel for moisture or by lifting the pot to check weight. It can look dry on top, but hold plenty of water lower down the pot. Further trials to investigate nutrition requirements in peat-free growing media are underway. So that's the RHS new service, peat-free advice service for all gardeners. You can email your peat-free growing questions to Nikki, that's N-I-K-K-I at peatfree@rhs.org.uk. All good stuff, eh? Bit of Genesis there, In That Quiet Earth from 1977. Can you believe that? We played that because the RHS has launched a peat-free advice service for all gardeners. You can email them at peatfree@rhs.org.uk. All good stuff. You are, of course, listening to the Live Science Radio Show here on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM and digital if you're in South Yorkshire, or sheffieldlive.org. Talking about science in all its different forms every week. Next up, I should have talked about this last week but forgot. Joe Wicks. Remember that name from lockdown? Movement Hour. I saw this article in the press. Britain's best-known fitness guru wants businesses to grant their staff an hour off for exercise. And I thought this was rather interesting. So after 5 years touring the nation's schools, fitness guru Joe Wicks is planning on helping Britain's office workers get into shape. This month, Wicks, who's 39, will tour 10 workplaces to run fitness classes, host question and answer sessions, and learn of the challenges they face in maintaining staff well-being. So far, 600 companies have signed up to participate in the Movement Hour, a Wicks initiative where staff are released from their duties for an hour to exercise, whether that be a gym workout or just a gentle walk. It will take place between 3 and 4 p.m. on Wednesday, the 5th of March. That's not far away, is it? Studies have linked a sedentary lifestyle to a higher risk of obesity, diabetes, and some forms of cancer. I'm just trying to now really focus on workplaces. People aren't looking after themselves, says Joe Wicks. They're overworked, they're stressed, they're probably not sleeping well. Nothing really shifts your mental health more than physical exercise. At The Body Coach, which is Joe Wicks' personal fitness business, staff work a four-day week. They're also given a full lunch hour and an hour on top of that to exercise each day. Joe Wicks acknowledges that businesses are under pressure, but says that that's no excuse not to allow staff time to exercise. And he says you'd be surprised at how just half an hour a day can make a massive difference. Very interesting.
I've seen all good people turn their heads each day, so satisfied I'm on my way. Take a straight and stronger course to the corner of your life. Make the White Queen run so fast, she hasn't got time to make you wife. Cause it's time, in time with your time, and this news is captured.
We're ready, Paul. That's a beauty of live radio, isn't it? You're, of course, listening to the Life Science Radio Show here on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM. That's a great track, that. Your Move by Yes. Fantastic. We played that, so we're talking about Joe Wicks' Movement Hour, targeting businesses. Fantastic stuff. We should all be well of RPG on the line.
Yeah.
Good morning, PG.
Good morning.
Good morning. On this rather cold February morning.
Yes, I better set defrost, haven't I?
I know. Where's spring? That's what we want to know. So, yeah. So what's caught your eye in the science news then this week?
Well, usually it's a bit of a scattergun this week. Just bits and pieces. One from Sheffield City Council, would you believe?
Oh.
Yeah, and it's a project that they're getting underway that aims to improve the tree equity across the city.
Oh, so, that's an interesting one, Paul.
Yeah, well, I mean, they've got that sort of unusual relationship to trees, haven't they, over recent years?
You could say that.
But it's one of the things that Sheffield really is known for, although perhaps we don't always talk about it. It's one of the greenest cities in Europe because of our tree coverage. So they're saying that's brilliant, but some of the areas of the city have got a higher tree canopy coverage than others. So to address it, the areas with less trees, they're going to put forward, they've got some funding in. So places like Darnall Ward, where the trees are not quite so populous, are going to get some help and receive funding to have more trees planted. So I think it's an interesting thing for the city. And also, a bit of news, which is funny. I mean, we talked, it's probably a while ago now, about Sheffield being one of the centres for brewing industry.
Indeed. I think I know what you might be going to say, because I think we saw this story as well.
Yeah, well, I think it's realistically, I think when we did it, it was something like 60-plus brewers, micro-brewers in the city of Sheffield. And in terms of, I think, breweries per head of population, we were either the country's leading, I think, or other places have come up to challenge. I'm not quite sure, we still are. But there are lots of sort of breweries. So Sheffield's now promoting the city has always been a bit of an issue, I think, over the years. Last thing that we saw was the use of some students to make a promotional film, which could go online. And they're trying to look for a future. And so the ideas that they've got at the moment are to promote Sheffield as this brewing centre. So it's very good. But also something that I used to do in my long-lost youth is climbing out on places like Stanage and Grindleford Way, out that way. If you look around, a lot of the edges are there. We're very good for rock climbing. And it's an attractive place for climbers, Sheffield, because there's a lot of free climbing and varied sort of surfaces that you can climb on. So they seem to be a bit odd as key points to promote a city.
We thought so too, Paul, to be fair.
Yeah, well, I think anybody will. I say, we've actually spoken about these things before, and I think the brewing industry was, again, something that I did in my youth, was at work in a brewery. So it's one of those things which, it's very interesting. And I've been surprised at the sort of range of beers and things. I think we've got a local hostelry just around the corner from the station there. And they have a changing menu of beers. So, it's very good. But I think I remember in the early days, Real Ale Campaign used to do Real Ale tours, and they'd actually list the places that you could visit that were serving Real Ale rather than mass-produced piddle.
Somebody we used to work with, when we were on a Valley of Beer Pub Crawl, which is round Hillsborough and Kelham, as back way back was, and he went into one of the pubs on, I think it was a Wellington, and asked for some double diamond, and it went down like a lead balloon, I have to say. But you know, we were talking about this. Sheffield was a place of breweries. Bridge Street, that was Whitbreads, I think.
Yeah.
Oh, Paul's phone's ringing. Sorry. Yeah, this is what happens with live radio. We'll have to kick him out of the studio now, Paul.
Yeah. Well, I worked at Stone's Brewery, which is one up at Neep's End, and further out was their bottling plant. Ward's Brewery, which is now sort of accommodation and I think a music venue. That was on Ecclesall Road.
Yes, that was a big brewery, wasn't it?
It was, yeah, and there was a big archway that they used to drive through with the drays, the lorries that carried the beer barrels and things. So I'll say that's morphed now into its modern form of accommodation and bars and restaurants, I think, in the lower level. And at Neep's End, Stone's Brewery is one that's actually sort of slowly been brought round to redevelop. It was a biggish site on a corner, so they're doing that up as part of the expansion of All Things Wonderful in the Neep's End area. So Whitbread's has been sort of consumed, I think, as accommodation, because it's down by the river and by Ladies Bridgeway.
Yeah.
One of the things that was always wonderful in the city centre, which is sort of gone with the microbreweries, is the smell of malt.
I remember it well as a child. Beer. Yeah, on Bridge Street. There used to be a little bus station on Bridge Street, didn't they? All cobbled, and the smell of the beer.
It's a lovely warm smell, the sort of malt. And I mean, the thing that makes it sharp is the hops. So. You find that they sort of changed over the years. But in my time at the brewery, it was a time of change because the brewing industry were moving towards these massive nationalised brews. So Brew 10 and Brew 11. 10 and 11 were for different areas of the country, but they were just a mass-produced regulated beer, which was, were called. So a lot of the character of brewing was really going. And then we got the Real Ale campaign, and a lot of things changed around, and now we've got this wonderful sort of diversity of brewing in the city. So it's interesting, but I think they're going to have to do some work to make it apparent to people.
Yeah, but it's interesting going back to something we were famous for, really.
Well, yeah, and you know, I mean, I think the thing is a lot of the time, well, actually, I don't know, there was another good sort of news story, which is that an American company that is making the mini nuclear reactors has said that they're going to start up in Sheffield because of our engineering base.
Interesting.
So that was quite a surprise because, I mean, we talked before about Rolls-Royce planning developments, and I think Forge Masters in Sheffield are gearing up for casting bigger components for some of these reactors. So that's part of the big development that's happening out at Forge Masters.
It is a massive development. It's on Whedon Street. They've been working on that quite a long time now. The amount they've excavated is phenomenal.
Yeah, well, I think it's going to be heavy casting, and it's heavier casting than they've ever managed to do before. So the thing with these is they've got to be so sort of well constructed in terms of a cast that yeah, if you're working with a nuclear power plant, you really don't want something that's going to fail. So
well, no.
It's interesting, and I mean, we have touched on it before, you know, there are sort of companies within the city that are developing and still sort of do things. I think I've interviewed people from Gripple, and Gripple started out with this thing for joining, actually, barbed wire fences was the idea originally for places like South America, where they were trying to contain the cattle, pretty much as they did in early days in America. So they came up with this linking system to join barbed wire fencing, and then looked around for what they could do and develop it into. And they applied the same sort of technology into suspended ceilings in buildings. So a lot of the time that's a framework that's suspended on metal cleats from the roof, and Gripple came up with a package for that. I think they also diversified into the wine industry. So again, one of their products was to use that technology, but to create the suspension wires for vines.
Oh, interesting, so, yeah.
So realistically, you know, there is still innovation and sort of technical knowledge here. And again, I think it's, I'm not sure it's listed as a cooperative, but it's a very cooperative way of working with the workforce at Gripple. So it's very
they've
good.
You've got a couple of buildings, haven't they? They've got one on, just off Whedon Street. I guess I can't remember what the road is on the back end off Attercliffe.
Yeah, well, I usually catch it if I'm on the train going out to Chapeltown and you go past.
Yeah, but they've also got a site on.
It's near Norfolk Bridge, isn't it?
There's one on Norfolk Bridge, but there's also one near Meadow Hall.
Yeah.
With there's one on Southside Lane as well.
Well, I think one of those is, I think the other place is Load Hog, I think it was called.
Oh, yes.
That's Weedon Street, yes.
Yeah, it's a sort of sled system for moving heavy items around that, again, came out of the requirement they got, and they saw the opportunity to develop it. So that's there, and I think up in Stocksbridge, I remember we talked about the steel company up there did a specialised steel thing called spin casting. So again, casting's in Sheffield. They could spin cast metal, and they could actually control the granular, the graining within the steel. And a lot of that product went off to places like Japan, not as massive ingots, but as they actually became the video recorder heads within video recorders.
Oh.
So, you know, there's a lot of innovation still around, but equally, I looked at desolation of what was the large-scale steel industry, and you could travel around Sheffield. We were looking for premises at one time, and you could kind of see the turn of the century in the early sort of 20th century. There were wonderful sort of buildings for people like Ward's, the people who scrap metal, and they got these wonderful panelled and furnished sort of meeting rooms, which were actually taken from the ocean-going liners when they were scrapped. They found these wonderful fittings and made their offices with them. And you could see then in the 20s, the 30s, the 40s, the 50s, the style of those premises had changed as we were looking around. And then you got to the early 60s and nothing developed after that, because that's when they ravaged the steel industry.
Yeah.
So, you know, there is a historic background, and it's one of the things that we find it very hard to do, to actually show that. And, you know, we keep, there's obviously the thing underway at the old Castle Market to try and make something of what used to be the castle entrance, the Sheffield Castle. But again, it was one of those things in the Civil War, after the Civil War, because it had changed hands as a castle, it was quite a stronghold. They went through this thing of, they called slighting of the castles and strongholds around the country to stop them ever being used in something like the Civil War again. So Sheffield Castle, unfortunately, was decimated. And I did talk at one time about the they put a guy in charge of actually architectural salvage in one of his earliest days. So people bought window frames and things from parts of what was the castle. And you can still find the remnants of it around. Orchard Square actually gets its name from, it was the orchard area for Sheffield Castle.
You can't believe it, can you? How things change, Paul. But talk, just before we let you go, talk about innovations in Sheffield. There is a company in Sheffield called Buffalo Systems. They make outdoor clothing and yes, things like that. And everything they make, they're quite pioneering. So there's a lot of people and businesses in Sheffield doing amazing things. We probably just don't know about them.
Well, again, talking about climbing, you know, there were some very innovative people producing aids for climbing. If you climb, a lot of the time you'll carry sort of a metal clip system with wedges and carabiners, the sort of oval-shaped clips that join ropes and things. A lot of developments were made because there was a climbing community in Sheffield in that area. And some of the clothing came out of that sort of relationship. Chris Bonington used to come to the city when I was at Sheffield Polytechnic, because there were other climbers who were in living in and working in Sheffield. So there is a relationship, but they've got to be able to create something attractive to people. It's very diversified across the city. That's the problem, and it's kind of a bit like when people ask me, where's the centre of Sheffield? Well, it's kind of a linear thing that starts off at the Castle Market, round past the town hall, down to the bottom of the moor. But then the way that they've managed traffic, it's how do you tell people how to get to places? Can be quite confusing. So I'd be interested to see this new super development starting on Pinston Street to link up with the top of the development work on the moor. And see what that's going to bring about, but hopefully a bit better than.
Yeah, no, I'll be very interested to see what happens with tree equity as well.
Absolutely, I think I don't know if you can sign up for a couple of shrubs, but
oh, I say, yeah, why not? All good stuff, Paul.
Thank you, Paul.
We shall speak to you Monday, Glory Days Rockshire, 1 till 3.
Good. All right.
Bye, bye, Paul.
Thank
bye.
Bye. Bye.
Sounds so sweet and clear in the courtroom of the king among children. Chessmen on their boards, for the fool's mate is a snare. So-
three times I have been born. I know through meditation. The bird, he flies the distance from pages 2 to 6. Past minstrels in their boxes to the water.
A rather interesting track there from Deep Purple, Listen, Learn, Read On. We talked to our PG about all sorts of stuff, mainly related to Sheffield. If you've just tuned in, of course, you're listening to the Life Science Radio Show here on Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM on digital, if you're in South Yorkshire, or sheffieldlive.org, talking about science in all its different forms every week, and we should have Gareth Morgan on the line. Good morning, Gareth.
Morning. Hi there.
Thank you for joining us on this rather miserable Saturday morning, we have to say.
No such thing.
No such thing as a miserable weekend. But see, it's very interesting that you're going to talk to us today as well about bad weather photography, so it all makes sense.
So for it's almost as though we planned it.
It is, but for people who don't know, you are a member of and also ex-president of the Sheffield Photographic Society.
That's right, I am indeed.
Yeah, and I see you've been rather, as a society, you're much more active now, aren't you, on social media, it seems.
Yeah, we've sort of picked it up a bit, I think, because although we're sort of, the average age of the group is not people you would expect to use social media a lot, but we have got a few younger members who've encouraged us to go down that road.
Yeah.
So it's good, and it's generated a lot of interest, so that's good.
Yeah, because you've been around for a long time. You are the oldest photographer, one of the oldest. Yeah.
Not Gareth.
No, I'm not saying you're the oldest. Your club is one of the, it's the oldest in the country, isn't it?
It's one of, yeah, 1864 we started. It's
amazing. And you've not got any original members, no?
No.
Brilliant. But how photography has changed over that time, but indeed.
Oh, it's amazing, yeah.
It is. Yeah. So, bad weather photography.
Yeah, well, I thought particularly given the weather we've had for the last few weeks, and even at the club, it's amazing that people have been saying, oh, I've not been out because the weather's so bad, I've not had a chance to take any pictures, which is absolute nonsense. It's the best time to take pictures, I often think.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm a bit out on a limb, but I think I've taken more pictures in the last 3 or 4 weeks than I've taken in, 6 months before that. I've been out on Fraserthorpe Beach photographing horses for 6 hours.
Oh, my
word. In a storm. I've been to a rugby match. I've been photographing some gymnasts out in a barn that they wanted to get some pictures with all their kit and that. And it was a bit cold, but, we managed. So as long as you get prepared, it's fine. You can get out and do all sorts of stuff.
That's interesting. I think you always said if it rains, the reflection of the water makes a massive impact. That was
It does, and I think the other thing, most people take their cameras out when it's bright and sunny. The trouble with bright and sunny is that means harsh shadows. So you get bright colours, but you also get really deep black shadows, and it's quite hard to deal with. You go out on a day like today, I mean, it's a little bit miserly around us, but it's an even grey sky. And that's like having a big light box in the sky. Everything is evenly lit. It's great for photographing detail. If you want to look for subtle colours and get in close on textures and shapes, it's great. And, I find that you get much better pictures. If the weather's even worse, you get more dramatic effects because you can get storms. I guess there's two aspects to it. One is taking photographs in bad weather, but the other one is taking photographs of bad weather, if you see what I mean. Both of those can be quite exciting and interesting to look at. I mean, you have to sort of prepare for these. You know the old saying, fail to prepare, prepare to fail. So you do have to plan a bit if you're going out in bad weather. And there are kind of three steps I always go through. One is the most important bit of kit is yourself. So make sure that you've got appropriate clothing on. because I mean, people have said there's no such thing as bad weather, just the wrong clothing.
Yeah, indeed.
And, you know, I was on the beach. I had storm trousers on. I had boots. I had a big weatherproof jacket on. I still managed to get my feet wet because I foolishly stood in the surf taking pictures of the horses galloping up and down in the water and didn't watch the tide coming in. And on the East Coast, it comes in quite fast.
It does, yeah.
So I found myself actually underwater at one point, or the top of my boots were underwater anyway. So that's kind of the first step. Look after yourself. If you're warm and comfortable, it doesn't matter if you get a little bit wet, but fine. If you get wet, it can be miserable if you're out there for ages. Second thing is protect your camera bag.
Yeah.
Lots of camera bags these days are weatherproof and fairly reliable. Mine comes with a built-in weather cover. So there's a little flap on the back and you pull out and there's like a plastic cover that fits perfectly around the bag. And it's easy to kind of get in and out. But failing that, just put a black bin liner on it. It's just
a really, really nice, expensive camera. Yeah,
it's just this, and it's this, and then the third step, of course, is protect your camera.
Yeah,
now you can buy all weather housings that cost about anything from, you know, 20 quid up to hundreds. I've got a fairly cheap one. I think it was 30 odd quid, and it's like a big plastic bag, really, but it's got holes for my hands to fit in.
Which is
quite good. So it's a plastic cover over the lens, over the controls of the camera, but I can get my hands inside. But failing that, and what I used to use was a large sandwich bag.
Yeah.
So you put that over your camera, elastic band around the lens, because that's the bit you want to keep as flat as possible. You don't want, you know, creased plastic over your lens. If you can keep that flat, and then just keep the rest of your bag, your camera dry, it's fine, because cameras don't like, you know, electronics and water don't mix very well.
No.
So that's kind of, and the other thing I always have in my pocket or in my bag is a microfiber cloth that soaks up any water that does get in. But you'll find, you know, most modern cameras, certainly Nikon, Canon, my Pentax, they're fine. Even if they get really soaked, they're usually fine. As long as you don't open up any of the compartments, let the water get inside, they are pretty weatherproof. So you can do a hell of a lot with that if you plan ahead a bit, really.
But I suppose if you use a sandwich bag or something, it's, you can dispose of it later. You're not having to dry it out and
That's right. I mean, that it is, and I've annoyed my wife because the last few shoots I've done, I've come back with the outside of my camera bag cover is soaking. So you have to sort of spread it out somewhere and let it dry out. But, you know. So what? It doesn't take that long.
But you mentioned about your hands. When you talk about, number one, looking after yourself, making sure you're comfortable, how on earth do you make sure your hands are warm and dry? Because there's nothing worse than cold hands, I would think.
So what I've got is a pair of, I can't remember the name of the make now, but they're photographic gloves. So they're like a sort of fairly, they're not wool or anything, they are a kind of plastic material, but the tips of the fingers fold back.
Oh,
so your hands are covered and they come up to probably the first knuckle on my hand.
Yes,
but you can fold the tips back and then get two or three fingers out on your thumb, depending on what controls you're trying to control, you know, use, adjust everything, take the picture, and then flip the top back over and your hands are warm again. So that works. One of the guys in the clubs has these little pocket warmer things that you can stick in your pocket and they generate heat and you can just keep your hands. In fact, I think he's got a jacket now with you press a button on it and it warms up to various parts of his body.
Brilliant.
Which is very odd. So you can do, you know, you can do a lot of preparing and then it just is about taking the shots. Foul weather is great. I mean, I've seen some fantastic pictures this week of waves crashing over. There's a particular road in Whitby. You may have seen it where it goes right alongside. It's not near the harbour. It's slightly further round. But the waves, when they come in, they crash right over it. And people still drive along it. You can get perched up above and take photographs of these idiots.
It can be dangerous, can't it?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, in a real storm, the water, I mean, when I say the waves come over, you know, they're over the top of the cars. It's amazing. So you get some shots of that and get out in the Peak District when you get... You have to be patient in bad weather. You do have to wait for things to change. But if you get a really cloudy day with a bit of sunshine, you can get some fantastic lighting effects with, you know, rays of light coming through, picking out particular areas, and you get those contrasty shots that just work really well.
Yeah, interesting. You sound like a seasoned campaigner.
Well, I do like my dramatic weather. And it's easy to do. From a camera perspective, it's the same settings as usual. You might have to overexpose a little bit if it's really dull. But just go out
and
try it. Do a few test shots. Adjust. I mean, I usually start on something like aperture priority, so you're kind of seeing what conditions you get. You may have to switch to full manual, although actually these days lots of cameras, even just on fully automatic, will do a good job because the dynamic range is so vast. You can deal with light and shade and all of that. It's quite easy.
Amazing. So I was going to ask, do you ever actually think about setting your camera up somewhere? Say, I don't know, some undercover or something, while you retreat somewhere else and do it remotely.
I've done that with night photography. So I've done that both in the garden and out in... the Peak District is great. And I mean, I'll give you some secret areas. There's a road on Bradfield. I don't know how many people know Bradfield, that looks down over the Strines Valley and all of that.
Yes.
And it's really dark up there. There's no street lights.
Of course.
You can't see any of the villages. And the night sky there is fantastic. So sometimes there's a lay-by. I just go, I've done it a few times now, put a camera on a tripod, set it up, maybe set it for a few minutes exposure, and then go sit in the car. And I have a remote control.
Wow.
So I can fire it every... I mean, you have to be within 50 yards or something, you know. So, but you don't want to leave your camera too far out of sight anyway.
Well, no, not when it's dark and there's no street lights. But this is how you get interesting stuff, though, isn't it?
Yeah, you can. And you can... I don't leave it... I'm dealing with bad weather. I kind of take the opposite approach. One thing I like to do, which I do in town, is kind of find a doorway or somewhere undercover where you can kind of hide away and take pictures of people in the, you know, struggling with the bad weather. Sheffield Station is great for that. You can stand in the... There's two areas that are quite well covered, but out in the open. And watching people running from the train and struggling with luggage in windy weather is great fun. But you get some good pictures as well.
Yeah, amazing. So any more top tips then for getting out there? And because you've done horses, you said beaches.
Yeah, gymnasts.
Rugby.
Martial arts. One of the girls, the gymnasts, also does kickboxing and
wow.
stuff like that.
Yeah.
So we did some of that with lights in a barn, and it was freezing. But she didn't mind because she was leaping about.
That's it. What about, you know, you talk about extreme weather. What about thunder and lightning? Are you after trying to capture lightning ever?
Yes. Yeah. So I mean, that you have to be. Well, there's ways of doing it. I mean, that's a good example of what we're talking about. Set your camera up on a tripod. You have to kind of guess where the lightning's hitting. Mm-hmm. So watch a few strikes because they don't move far. Then you have to do a long exposure, open the camera up and hope that you get a flash while it's open. So it's a bit hit and miss, but it's when you get it, it's fantastic.
This is
good. And it's the same with the Northern Lights. The amazing thing this year is the number of times that the Northern Lights have been visible in and around, you know, Sheffield and the East Coast particularly. Fantastic Northern Lights this year. Same principle, get your camera on a tripod, open it up. You'll be amazed what you see because the camera picks up more detail than the naked eye.
Yeah. Is that because it's looking at different colour wavelengths? Is it picking up the differentiation between them?
It's the light spectrum that your eye adjusts mentally for it, whereas the camera records absolutely all the different shades.
Yeah. Does it really make a massive difference then, the quality of your camera? It must do when you're looking at Northern Lights and things like that.
It as long as you've got a camera that can do long exposures, I mean, if you've got a snap, a camera that just snaps and you've no controls over it, then you're going to struggle. But, I mean, even with a mobile phone, the shots you can get of things like the Northern Lights are absolutely amazing, particularly with if you've got the latest versions of the iPhone 15 Pro or the, I think Samsung have got one out. I've forgotten the name of that. Google have got their Google Pixel.
Well, things move on so fast. We've got Samsung, I think, S10s, and the photography is fantastic. But yeah, I think they must be on Samsung 24, I think, by now.
Well, it is, and that's, you know, it's one of the things that we're seeing. The camera club, we're actually having more camera photographs all the time, and we're even thinking of introducing one of the competitions just for camera phone pictures.
Oh, really? Is that from the younger people coming into the
club? Think everybody's catching up to it, because we all like playing with gadgets in camera clubs, and it's amazing. 2 years ago, everybody would have been dead against it.
Yeah.
You know, we all love cameras. Now they've developed so far. Yeah. You often get better shots with the, I hate to say it, but with the mobile phone than you do with a fixed camera. we even get people using them in the studio now. It's just... That does drive me slightly mad. But
it's interesting, because there is a bit of a renaissance with real, well, proper cameras.
Well, it's kind of going both ways, I think. It's going, you know, small, you've got it in your pocket, you can take pictures all the time. That's your mobile phone. But the retro film cameras, Harrison's are running a workshop in a couple of weeks for analog photography. Have a look on their website, because it's going to be really good.
I think I've seen. I think Sheffield Photographic Society shared that.
Yes,
post.
I think we did. Yes,
but they're becoming. You were saying they're becoming more and more active, because they've been around a long time, Harrison cameras, and they're still there, and they're still clearly moving with the times. And I guess it's like any club, you've got to move with it.
You do, and they always have. And it's a great place to go and try stuff out. They've got a fantastic second-hand department as well. If you want to get into photography cheaply, buy a second-hand camera. That's, you know,
and just get used to it. But I suppose if you start to get interested in photography from a mobile phone point of view, there's a chance you're going to think, do you know what? I want to go down a proper camera route and have control.
Yeah.
So
it gets you into some. We've got a couple of young guys who've joined the club, and that's how they started. And now they've bought their first proper camera and want to kind of learn how to use it a bit. Which is great. I mean, that's the way we all go.
Yeah, well, yeah. And on that subject of photography, you've still got your Sheffield Photographic Society open competition running until the end of this month, is it?
1st of March, we're going to do the judging, I think.
And you're getting all sorts in.
We are. We're getting a lot of landscapes and a lot of cityscapes. I thought we'd have more people and more nature. We've not had as much of that. So if there's anybody out there who's interested in those, get them in, because they'll be a bit different.
And it's a great, it is a great opportunity. And I think the winning one will be displayed alongside your club.
We're going to put a panel of four images in the exhibition. So the two winners in each age category is the current plan.
Yeah.
And they get a photographic voucher for Harrison's cameras as well. So, and we've had some great entries so far, but they're very, they're quite concentrated in a couple of areas, so it would be nice to have some variety.
Mm. Yeah, well, I was saying to you off air, Gav, I'm trying to convince one of our friends, she's into photography, and we're saying, come on, you need to enter something. And she's like, I don't know, but we'll press her further.
Yeah, keep going. And it's, you know, there's no cost. It's email a digital image to us. We'll handle the printing. We'll handle everything. And, we'd love to see a few. We'd like to see some more people shots.
Yeah, and where will they be displayed? Is that going to be the cathedral?
Yes, Sheffield Cathedral.
Is that April, generally? Is it? I can't remember.
28th of March until 6th of April.
It's coming up fast, isn't it? Brilliant.
Well, we've done the selection for the members' prints.
Ooh.
So we had an external judge last week, in fact. That's all done.
Wow.
So we're now just sorting out how they're going to be displayed, getting the catalogue ready. And then we'll make the selection on the 1st of March for this open competition, get those printed, and then we're ready to go.
Wow. And have you had any accepted this year then?
I've had a few.
A few? I think you had about 7 last year.
Yeah, well, I've got 6 this year.
Oh, is it something year on year? It's like, it's like having, getting one more birthday card every year. But no, that's brilliant to get so many in, because there must be a risk every year. The standards are very high.
Well, yeah, and the other thing is that you get a judge who doesn't like what you do.
Yeah.
Because it's one person. And, you know, sometimes they can be quite subjective.
Yeah, well, have you gone for people or street art or a bit of both?
Mainly people.
Yeah.
Some animals this time.
Oh,
and a bit of street photography, but not art. It's just some bill. You'll have to come and see.
Yeah, we will, of course. Fantastic stuff. As always, Gareth, thanks so much for joining us.
Pleasure.
Okay, take care and enjoy this lovely weather this weekend. Do some more photography.
Well, I am. I'm going out tomorrow.
Excellent.
Whatever the weather, I'm off.
Great fun. Bye-bye, Gareth. Bye.
Bye. Thank you.
Bye now. Bye.
Stormy weather at 57 Mount Pleasant Street. Well, it's the same room, but everything's different. You can find the sleep, but not the dream. Things ain't cooking in my kitchen. Strange affliction wash over. And the Roman Empire couldn't conquer the blue sky. Well, there's a small boat made of China. It's going nowhere on the mantelpiece. Do I lie like a lounge room lizard, or do I sing like a bird released? Everywhere you go, always take the weather with you. Everywhere you go, always take the weather. Everywhere you go, always take the weather with you. Everywhere you go, always take the weather.
Fantastic try, that Crowded House, Weather With You. We played that because we're talking to Gareth Morgan, who's a member of and also ex-president of the Sheffield Photographic Society, talking about bad weather photography. Don't let the weather put you off. Get yourself out and get photographing. And don't forget, Sheffield Photographic Society have got an open photography competition ongoing. You just need to email spsphotography514@gmail.com. Get your entries in. And also, just to say that there's no film show in After Us today.
No.
All being well, they should be back with us next Saturday at 12 until 1. Thanks for joining us today on the Life Science Radio Show here on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM. If you can't wait until next Saturday, join us for Glory Days Rock Show, Mondays 1 till 3. Following that, Rob Wellington will be in the house from 3 until 5. Motown's his first hour, and then his second hour is always themed. What his theme will be, who knows. Later on in the week as well, you can also catch Steve Roden's show. It's the Music Box Thursdays, 10 till 12. We play some great stuff as well. So bye-bye, folks.
Bye-bye.